Welcome to the new episode of Literaturnut. It's again an English episode, and it's not strictly about short prose, but about two big essays. One is by Jamie Lee Campbell from Germany, and one is by Marie Wilbert from the USA. And they are both my guests today, and I will ask all the questions I can think about. But before I start, I would like Marie to introduce herself, because maybe not everybody from the usual suspect audience knows you yet.
Okay, so my name is Marie Wilbert, and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio in the United States. And I write a lot of short fiction. I've had 90 short stories out in all the cool places. I've been in Clark's World, Analog. I've been in a lot of magazines. And three novels. I was a Hugo and Nebula nominee last year for my novelette, We Built This City. How's that? I mostly write things from a very working class kind of point of view, because I grew up, I was raised by a single father who was a laborer, and that's my background.
And maybe I should also mention how we get to know each other, because yeah. The last Andromeda magazine, which is usually a magazine in German language, was an English episode for the Worldcon. And I guess you attended the Worldcon in Glasgow this year.
Yes.
And grabbed a magazine and read it. And I had some really small research about the gender of authors of science fiction short prose for the last 3 years, I think. And you saw that article and sent me an email with your research. And then I pointed out Jamie's research, which appeared 2 days ago at Tor Online.
Yeah. And then just the emails kept getting longer and longer. And fangirled all over each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. All thanks to short prose in translation and a free magazine.
Yeah, that's true. And we decided to cut the email and just talk to each other and record everything and talk about your research. And Jamie has already been in my podcast 3 times as a co-moderator, but today she's one of the guest stars. So that's the point where I would like you to introduce yourself, Jamie.
So thanks for having me on this side of the couch. My name is Jamie Lee Campbell. I start to learn to write weird fiction and science fiction, and use this analysis, which we're talking about, to get insights how or about what German science fiction is about, or about what kind of characters do German short stories in science fiction deal with. So that was my way to get an idea of the scene, because I'm a scientist. So, and I think that this is something we three have in common. We just like numbers, and we just like to work into new issues through numbers. So this was my way into the science fiction, to get an idea about it.
And we all read each other's research. And what I think is really cool about your research question, Marie, it's how you got the idea of the research. Could you perhaps tell us?
I was at a cocktail party. I had just joined the Science Fiction Writers Association, Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association. And back then, they had an annual cocktail party in New York City. And I was so excited and nervous, and I could barely afford the bus trip to New York, but I did it. And I was crashing on a friend's couch so I could go to this cocktail party. And there I am, and everybody asks, like, so what kind of science fiction do you write? And I'm learning the concept of the elevator pitch, and I'm like, I write things with robots and spaceships, you know, science fiction. And I can just feel myself like not doing well at the elevator pitch. So then I was like, okay, calm down, Marie. What makes your stuff different? So the next guy who approaches asks me what kind of science fiction you write. And I say, you know, I really like to write about working class characters in space, you know, space janitors. And I just feel like this is what I said. I said, I feel like there are too many stories about rich people and I can't relate. And the guy goes, there are too many stories about those dreary everymen. I want to read stories about rich people. I want people who can afford to follow the plot. And I was like, well, I'm never talking to this guy again. But then I was like, wait, is he right? Are there more stories about working class characters? And I'm just not seeing it because of my bias. So I decided to prove him wrong. I mean, let's be honest. I was pretty sure there were more stories about rich characters. I always read a lot of science fiction, so I feel pretty well read in the genre. But I wasn't going to take my own memory for it, because memory can lie. I was going to get some numbers. And then the British Science Fiction Association, the BSFA, announced that they were doing a special issue on class issues. And I was like, oh, I could write this. So I pitched. Having not actually done anything other than think about the research, I pitched it. They said yes. Then I was on the clock. I had to figure out what my sample set was. How do you define a sample set of science fiction in English? There's so much. How do you define working class character? And that was very hard. And one of the first things I noticed was when I tried to do research into how class is defined in America, I discovered that class is not defined in America. America is very against defining class. 90%, it was ridiculous. It wasn't 90, it was like 99.99% of the academic articles on class were about the middle class. And they had titles like, is the middle class reacting well to the pandemic? Is the middle class shrinking? Is the middle class growing? How does the middle class feel about immigration? And I was like, yeah, okay, but how are you defining middle class? You can read my paper about how I struggled with defining class. And I found the Pew Research study, which broke Americans down into three groups by income. And that was pretty nice. It was like, we have the top percentile, the bottom percentile, and the middle percentile. That's pretty good. Of course, class isn't all income. So I looked at wants and needs and how well the characters were able to provide their basic needs. And yeah, I feel like I've been talking too long. Is that okay?
It's totally okay. I had guests talking 20 minutes nonstop, so you only have like 4 or 5 minutes, so go on.
I like your approach to go for what makes the stuff different, because, well, I just analyzed over 160 short stories in Germany about all the characters which emerged there. And I also thought, okay, if I have this empirical evidence, it's not all what was published, and I think it's much more easier in Germany to get an overview of what is published in German language than in the US or in international level. So that, I think, makes it much more easier for me to gather my sample. I think this is also a good base to figure out, okay, about what will I write, what distinguished my writing from other stories. And I really like your approach about working class, because I also think these are the stories we need to be told, because we often oversee this kind of people. And there are a lot of stories about rich people who can afford the space, yeah, of course. But you also need people who clean the space. Otherwise, they can afford a dirty spaceship or whatever. So the others could also give us some really nice insights about tropes we already know or stories we already know with the new perspectives. And this is also a thing which revealed for me when I did the analysis to see, okay, there are often things which goes in similar directions. So it's like a kind of mainstream where certain characters or also some kind of tropes, some kind of stories repeat themselves because the characters are more or less the same. Or they're very similar, or if you say homogenic, is it homogenic?
Homogeneous.
Homogeneous? Or... Oh, okay, thank you. So if you always have the same characters, you can't be really diverse in the things you're telling because they have this scope which is always the same. So this was something I thought, okay, it's really interesting to see what kind of edges do we have from all the things we're looking at. So this I really like, and I hope that people take the analysis, and we will share, I think, both essays from us, yeah. So that in the raise a call in the notes.
I love the depth of your research that you didn't just look at, you know, male and female. You looked at gender. You looked at
mental illness,
body issues, disability, race. Yeah, you looked at everything, and I was just floored by it.
Yeah, well, my motivation was not as cool as yours because it wasn't New York, it was Berlin. And there was a discussion about the diversity of, I think it, perhaps we can say own voice, authorship. And this is, I think in the US it's, well, in Germany we are several years behind the developments in the international level. And there was an intensive discussion about it, and I just got the idea while I took part in the room. I didn't discuss it there actively, but I thought it was really interesting what kind of arguments they shared. And I thought, okay, to look at the narratives and to look at the characters gives us also some ideas. What kind of stories and narratives do we talk about? Do we always talk about white people in Germany, mostly? Do we talk about only Germans? Okay, we talk much about German, but we also talk about Anglo-American characters, which is really surprising. I guess in the US, it's do you have other focus in that? And it would be also interesting if other cultures have also this major focus on Anglo-American figures, just to get a glimpse of the origins of science fiction.
I do feel like, yeah, like there's this dominance of the Anglo-American world that casts a shadow, right? And I think that minorities have a very clear view of the majority. Much more, there's an asymmetry there, right? Mm. The majority is pretty blind to the minority point of view, but the minorities, they see the majority very well.
I got a really nice... I don't know, it was an actress, and this actress says, I can speak men, but I can also speak
Meryl Streep.
Women. Meryl Streep, oh, okay, yeah. This actress.
Yeah. You told me that.
And I really love that she said, I can speak men, but I want to speak women, and I think more men should be speak women. And I think it's also the same with codes of different minorities or different backgrounds. It's just, they've got some... Yeah, there are differences, and it's really interesting and enrichful to listen to that, to understand it, and to get a different perspective of things we are used to. And this is also a part for me, what is my cure of science fiction, to get new perspective of things I already thought I know, to get new ideas, what could things be, what could happen, what could be different. And this is exactly the thing, what make your stuff different. And this is something I expect from science fiction, to be different than other types of literature and to tell me things which bring me to totally new ideas and totally new feelings. You could also do it with the usual cast, but I think it's getting more and more difficult because you always told everything on them, or mostly, or you have to go to really particular places to find new things were not already told.
Also, I think we, in science fiction, we deal with the realm of ideas and philosophy a lot, and morality, and looking for new solutions to current problems. And if you focus on very rich characters, the solutions all look like money. or the solutions look like finding the right strong man to take over and make the right decision. And what does, you know, what does that look like in the real world?
We can't solve our problems because we have easier strong men than money.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, but if billionaires could fix climate change, they'd have done it by now. So looking for solutions that are in the reach of everyday people is important to me too. And distributing power, and I'm going to get political.
I really like it because if I see usual people, how they struggle and how they overcome it, how they get over the hurdles, I can learn something from myself because I can identify with them and I see they've got these problems. Okay, they got sci-fi problems. Perhaps they got problems to get out of the ship. I don't have a ship, but I can relate on it in an abstract way. However, if I just have to go for money, that's nothing what I can learn. Because right. It's a really simple way and it doesn't have, it's not a really creative problem solving and it's not really developing yourself because you just go for the money you always had. So that's, for me, it's boring. It would be interesting if you have these rich people and they're forced to live with no money at all. So that could be interesting to see, okay, how do they struggle if they get out of their comfort zone in space and they don't have a helmet or whatever. So that would be interesting for me because it's something different. We sound a lot of stereotypes about how rich people deal and it's always the same. Or it's a stereotype. Perhaps it's a stereotype.
Well, yeah, whoever you're talking about, you want to be honest and you want to be real. And if you're leaning on stereotypes, you're being false. I think readers pick up on that falseness and they're like, well, why should I listen to you? Because you're setting up a straw man or a cardboard villain. Yes, puppy, I know. Sorry, the dog. She's very demanding of the pets right now.
We have forgotten to introduce our third guest, Marie's dog.
Yes, Koala is a Blue Point Pit Bull, and I got her from the Animal Protective League, and she's very sweet. Support your local dog rescue. She does have a little star collar that I got her. My most recent story has a dog in space, actually. She's a rescue in the latest issue of fantasy and science fiction. Though I based that dog on my childhood dog, Fleur.
I started to count the animals too, but I didn't get through all the 160 stories. There were dogs and horses, I can remember. Was there a whale? Yeah, there was one whale. But I thought, okay, just focus on the characters. You can call.
Whale, though.
Yeah, I think you can actually code very simple stories. You just I sticked to the language because I just wanted to reduce the own interpretation scope. And there are a lot of many details which you just can count and get an idea about the bigger picture, which is really interesting because I think the method it's not that complicated to read stories and to code something out and then to count it and to just compare it if you just have different sources or somewhat. So that's quite simple.
Simple but not easy because
simple
it's
but not
labor.
Easy. Yeah, of course, simple but not easy. And I think, as you said, it's not about the feeling about an issue. It's about knowing how it is. And in science fiction, it's about science. So it's good to have also science about what we are writing about to have a discussion what kind of narratives we want to read. We are used to read several, but what do we want to read? What are we missing to read? And I think this is a really interesting question because do we know what we need to read or what would enrich us to read? Or do we only know it when we found it?
I was going to say, I thought it was interesting that I thought I would find more non-contemporary jobs. Mm-hmm. I thought there would be more people whose job was widget tuner or AI psychiatrist. It's interesting to me that it's difficult to imagine different spheres of work in the future.
Well, that is interesting because in the English version of my essay, there are not the occupational analysis. This is only in the German version, which will come next year. And I also had the impression that the jobs are very usual. They are more middle class, I would guess. I think it was really interesting how you say it's so difficult to define class. I don't know if we have that in German because I didn't look for a definition. I just coded the jobs. So we had, this is just a really slight indicator for possible class, but I wouldn't put my hand on that. My finding was there are really ordinary bureau jobs, mostly in the short stories, and the bureaus are mostly looking the same as my bureau look today. And I was just like, all right, this is science office fiction in 20, 50 years, and you have the same chair and the same table, and there's nothing happened. We have AI, we have drones, we have what kind of variables, and but not in the bureau. So that looks, I think for my workplace, that would be true because I'm working for the government. Nevertheless, I think there will be a lot of jobs we will have, perhaps they don't have any bureau at all. But there was really too conventional, and I thought, okay, I don't know why people try to stick that. Why don't they think about these terms in the future? Because it's really easy to do world building through the job. Just do some spacey missions in there, and then you thought, no, okay, this is a whole other area where we are in. But most of them didn't do that.
Because they're not really thinking about it. I think when I was a little girl, and I thought about what I wanted to do when I grew up, I knew I wanted to have an office. I wanted to work in an office and wear suits and have a desk.
I wanted to be a mayo.
So it's not a very thought through occupation, right? It's like on sitcoms. So many people on sitcoms work in an office, but we never really know what they do. They just go to the office.
Like Chandler. Nobody knows about Chandler's job.
No.
Ooh, that's a good story.
Now, I found, and this is the biggest job I found was scientists, which makes sense. It's science fiction.
But it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
If they're all scientists.
Right, but that was the thing, too. There was only, like, one character who was, like, a research assistant. And there was only one character who was, like, an academic principal investigator. The others were just, I'm a geologist, but you don't see them like working on a grant, right? They just happen to be the geologist who came along for the ride.
So perhaps we see that jobs are just kind of function where they get dressed like their trousers and stuff like that, and we don't see how they live their job. I saw a lot of sex workers doing their job, doing the stories.
There was
really plastic. They're always working. I never see them not work. Oh no, there was one story where they had a chat.
Sex workers have to go grocery shopping too, people.
Oh yeah, that would be a nice one. Yeah, there were a lot of scientists. Military is also right. A huge part,
but always like special forces or.
It's always special. It's not the ordinary, but it's interesting. You have these special jobs, but you have them described in a very ordinary way or not at all way. So it's just like, okay, we are tipping on this idea, which every one of us shares, but we don't tell you what is the distinct or significant thing they're doing. If you're a geologist, there could be something really special. I don't know what they're doing, so I couldn't go into more detail, but perhaps there is something, I don't know, is there going for?
Nobody wants to see a geologist carefully, you know, editing their spreadsheet about the average length size of crystals in this formation.
Wouldn't it be interesting to make that with tension, with a nice plot that people would like to read it?
I really want to. My undergraduate studies were in geology, and people keep asking me, why don't I write something with a geologist character? I'm working on it.
I'm a psychologist. There are a lot of people who write psychologists, so this is this is something
psychologist people... was the number one, was one of the big ones. Yes.
Psychologist? Really?
Psychologists and other psychiatric medicine. I think, again, not shown at work, but because I think they wanted to talk about philosophy or mental things.
So why then we use the jobs if we don't show them?
Right.
So what's the point in giving a character a job if we don't see the character working in that job at all, if that job doesn't shape the thinking or the speak, the language, the perspective of the world? Because my job, okay, I'm a scientist and a psychologist, and it shapes my perspective of the world, of course. And I think, using special terms, it's the way I'm going to solve problems. It influenced me a lot. And if I don't see that in characters, do I need the job at all?
Right.
If they're rich, they can do it. It can be anything. But
yeah, I think it's important to talk about, you know, how do your characters earn income? Do your characters need to earn income? How is their life shaped?
But we don't see that often.
Yeah, we don't.
But I think I like the idea, because this is things that shapes the correct character. It shapes their latitude. It shapes what they can afford, how they handle issues and stuff like that.
What's available to them. And it builds constraints. That was the other thing. A lot of people were like, but Marie, it's just easier to have a character who can hop in their private helicopter and follow the plot. But also remember that constraints build tension. And if your character can't hop in a private helicopter, now you've got a new story problem. How do I travel to, you know, how do I get past the line of flying saucers, right? Mm-hmm. With my Metro card when the buses aren't running.
I think it sounds that you said it now twice. The characters can't follow the plot. So the plot is something which is fixed, and it could be just this plot.
Right.
And if the character doesn't fit.
If you're a good writer, you can change the plot to match the characters. And it all has to serve theme and what you're trying to say and showing us something new and different and exciting. And that's the cool thing about science fiction. Mm. I think science fiction gets a bad rap sometimes. I was just at a author event at a library where I taught a class. I taught a free class to about like 60 people on how to do plots. And then I was like, and buy my books. And the audience of mostly elderly and middle-aged women were like, we don't read science fiction. But there's so much more you can do when one of your options is to change reality. I don't know.
So many cool plot things. The sun could be younger than... The sun could be older than the father in science fiction, which might cause problems, or other strange things, or time machines, which cause all kinds of problems.
It's about isolating, you know, problems in the human psyche or in society, creating a heightened reality that can explore the philosophical and moral consequences, right? In a way that is just easier than in non-genre fiction.
Yeah, especially if you have emotionally intensive issues or themes or arguments. So it might be easier to have robots to play this theme through than to have human beings that we can meet at the grocery store. So we could be emotionally attached in a kind of safe place, and we can follow these emotions because we know it's safe, we know it's science fiction, it's not real, and there we can open parts of us to take part and to embody that problem, which we couldn't if it's in our real life. Although these could be the same problems we face in real life.
And you can speak across political divides, because I think Rod Serling, the producer of Twilight Zone, said that, you know, he started Twilight Zone because he had been writing regular dramas and he kept getting censored. He was like, you know, the sugar company doesn't like the politics of this drama that takes place in Congress in Washington. Can you take the politics out? He's like, then they're not going to talk about anything. And he realized that if they were on Mars, he could have them talk about political issues. Because as soon as I say, you know, I'm a social democrat, people are like, oh, I'm not going to listen to you because I don't like those people. But if I say, you know, I'm part of the Free Venus Party, people are like, tell me more.
And I think this is also an issue of our time, because, well, if you have this story, we have each character stands or manifests a value, and we have this value clash. And if we have the value clash we face with our neighbors, with our friends, with our family, it's really difficult to stand to them because it's so close to us and to our own emotions, and we have to question our own value if we find them. But it's easier if we have them on Venus and Mars. So that's the thing I meant. We can attach and we can allow us to feel the emotion because we know it doesn't have any consequences for us, and it's so far away that we know we don't have to re-question our own values, although we perhaps change for just kind of experience the other side or stuff like that. And I think this is a potential which is underrated in fantastic genre, that you can do especially these things, which could be cure values, which could be huge problems. And these are the only safe spaces we can totally play them through.
Absolutely. Yes, listen to Jamie.
And you had like 150 short stories all published last year and coded every figure in it.
That's a lot. That's how do you sleep? That's so much work.
Oh, I slept okay in that time. but... Well, it makes it different if you read a story to read it or if you read a story to analyze it. So there were, well, I don't know if that's similar in the US, because there were some stories in Germany where you have 30 figures which just came up and die immediately. So I have to code them for that short period of one or two sentences they exist. I've got the impression that the international or US stories have a lot shorter or smaller casts than some of the German stories or short stories have.
Yeah, I think you might be right, and it might be interesting for us to compare and look and see if that's a national style. So let's talk about our project.
Yeah.
Because we didn't just fangirl all over each other in our emails. We started plotting, and we're going to try to recreate Jamie's methodology on American science fiction, starting with the stories that were nominated for the Hugo, the Nebula, or the British Science Fiction Award. And the three of us are going to code those stories. I think we got a list of about like 30.
Yeah.
That seems way more doable than 150, I'm just saying.
We listened to Jamie's advice not to start so big that you need, I don't know how much time you needed, like 8 months or something like that.
Yeah.
Because we all have jobs.
Yeah.
We all have jobs. And I have two jobs. I'm teaching part-time right now, as well as my day job as a computer programmer.
And we also, we will look at similar categories. We mix them up. We look for class. We look for jobs. We look for mental illness, for body issues, for cultural background. And then we're really curious what we will find in these stories. and if they're how diverse they are, and yeah.
Yeah, so really going to look for race and nation of origin.
Yeah.
And we're going to compare that with the authors. It's going to be cool.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be very nerdy.
Yeah. Then we'll have some data, and then we can look and see what the data says.
Yeah, we thought in Germany it's well, there are what do you had, Yvonne, 450 stories per year, short stories.
Yeah, in some years almost 500. There were a little bit less last year because a publisher stopped working, and the publisher was responsible for like 70 stories a year, so it was a bit less. But we did an analysis for the last 20 years, and it was growing from like 100 or 200 stories a year to almost 500. And during the years 21, 22, I read like 350 each year, and then I cut down because I couldn't stand it anymore. And
she
this year
to
I have
read
read maybe
international.
Yes, I started to read Clark's World, Asimov's, and all the Anglo-American magazines instead, and only like 50 short stories from Germany this year so far, I guess.
So before I did the class in science fiction project, I had done a project where I wanted to see the frequency over time of female authors in science fiction. And that was inspired by, I was working in a library and they had a science fiction magazine collection. And they were like, Marie, you write science fiction, come see the archive. And I pulled this like Galaxy magazine off the shelf in my white cotton gloves, of course. And right on the cover was a woman's name that I had never heard before. And I was like, wow, here is a woman on the cover of Galaxy magazine in 1945 or whatever. So I went and I looked through Galaxy, FNSF, Asimov's, Analog/Astounding, Fantastic Magazine, Amazing Stories, and Omni. And also, well, yeah, so I did like 6 or 7 magazines over their entire lives. I don't want to say how many short stories that was. But one of the things that I saw was that I saw the number of short stories per year just going up, right? And it just kept, like, the 90s, it took off. And in the 1990s, there were more women credited for writing short fiction than in the 2000s, because there's this crash between 2000 and 2005, as the rise of the internet killed off the paper magazines.
Mm.
And unfortunately, my data collection ended in 2010. I did that because my first short story in one of those magazines was in 2011, and I didn't want to include myself in the research. I thought that would, I don't know, bias things in
minus
some weird way.
-1.
The point is, it was an excuse to stop, because after that crash in 2000 to 2005, it starts creeping up again and it gets way higher. With like, yeah, 1,000 short stories a year just in the 5 magazines.
Not counting all the anthologies and the other magazines.
And yeah, that's why we stick to our list and started with them, because we didn't want to choose single magazines to have a bias in there. So we thought, okay, the ones that get prizes stands for something and could be, well, each magazine has a chance to have them. Perhaps it's also biased, but that's the reason why we say, okay, this is a starting point, and we will see if we just stick by that or if we just put some more magazines in or stories. We will see just during your coding.
Because process. Editors can make a difference. Mm-hmm. The first editor for FNSF, Boucher, was accused of having a monstrous regiment of women because 10% of his issues had female authors, or 10% of the stories he published were female authors. But that was 9% higher than the other magazines at the time. And Ben Bova at Analog published way more women than the editors before or after him at that particular magazine. So that was an interesting thing to find.
We in Germany, we have many more female authors in anthologies, and two of the magazines have the majority of men, sometimes even an issue without any women.
This year
last year and this year again, and maybe one woman or one non-binary person, and but there are magazines that are different, that really make some effort to find non-male authors and encourage them, because you can actually do something actively. You can ask around.
Yeah. And I think that's what Ben Bova did. He sought people out. The other thing I found was that women don't tend to get put on the covers as much.
With their name or with their body?
The name. No, the bodies, of course.
I just imagine all the pictures where you have almost naked women and boobs and stuff like that. And I just thought, okay, there are a lot of women on covers.
No, yeah.
The names is more important.
I was looking for the Beefcake, and the Conan covers were just not as frequent. Yeah, no, I looked for the appearance on covers of names, and I found that in the 90s, when female representation was high, women were more likely to be on the cover. But then there were other times where there were more women inside the magazine than on the covers as credits. But some of that is like perceived who's the big author, I think. I don't know who gets the cover, who gets the cover name.
Is it a strategic thing, or is it just, we like that story the most? Could be different reasons.
Yeah. Really, I was just trying to pressure off editors into putting my name on their covers, but...
Does it work? Or did it work?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. My cover appearance hasn't gone up.
But is it still an issue in Anglo-American, US-American magazines to have all these almost naked women on the front pages?
Not really, no. I do think that we still prefer... I feel like there is still a dominance of the woman as beautiful, which I will fight because men are sexy. But I see a lot of women in spacesuits with guns, you know, sexy sword lesbians, you know. I think that we've gotten less, exploitative in the depictions, but I still feel like there are more women than men on covers, just because of the dominant paradigm being that women are attractive and men aren't. Those of us who are attracted to men would like to say, hey, equal time here.
Is it really that you get more bias if you have women on the cover? When right now you can have naked women all the time you want, we got internet. So is it really still an issue, or is it still does it make a difference Does someone get, say, oh, actually, I didn't want to buy this magazine, but now where I see this beautiful woman, all right, this is my money, just give it to me. And all the other three things too. Does somebody do that? I don't know. I think this is also an old-fashioned stereotype we still live in. Because
if you want
to have naked bodies, you can have it all the time you want, everywhere you want. You don't need to pay for that.
Yeah, I will say, like, the three still in print magazines tend to have spaceships and landscapes on the cover these days. And Clark's World always has a robot. Have you noticed? It's always a robot. Maybe not always, but very frequently a robot. I'm going to Clark's World right now. I'm going to their website to see what the current issue
I see 100 cover robots is. And one whale.
I will just check my Kindle and you are right. Oh, yes.
It's a cool ornithopter.
It's not always, but really often.
Very often.
Is it a female or male robot, or is it a non-binary robot, or a robot which is a robot?
It's a robot most.
Hey, that's cool. I like that, if it's a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a robot. And then it's somebody in a spacesuit who could be anybody.
That's also cool. Gives you more time for creativity.
And again, your spacesuit is not going to have shaped boobs, okay? I'm sorry. I did medieval reenactment fighting. You can't move if your breastplate has boobs. Trust me, it's nice and flat.
She had experience in that.
Yes, because they make they try to make the breastplate with shaped boobs, and then your arm hits the boob. No,
but they don't describe that in the fighting scene, so that's not proper.
Yeah,
not a proper fighting scene.
I'm sorry, Mecha Agent 27. Your power suit really shouldn't have breasts.
I had a short story last year, so not so long ago, and the first person narrator was female, but in the body of a robot, and the robot reminded every test reader of Wally, who had to tidy up the world in the end. Aww. And for some reason, the illustrator, though, made it a seemingly naked, silvery woman with so large breasts. And that wasn't in the text, but somehow it was in the head of the illustrator.
Choices were made.
Yes.
Choices were made. Right. And again, is this really helping sell the story? Is this helping sell the story if there's nothing in the story that involves breasts? That's all I'm saying.
It was totally unsexy. The story was so far away from sex, you can't imagine. But there was a baby in it, so maybe that's the reason why.
A lot of milk for the baby.
Yeah, but still, it was a robot without milk. Oh.
Just the feeling of milk.
I wrote a story for, there was a call that wanted female warrior poets. So I wrote female identifying robot, war robots learning about poetry. That story was called Battle Robot 37 Dreams of Trochees. But in it, I had to come up with a reason why they were female, and that was that they had a chest cavity that stored their ammo. So they looked like, so because of the shape of their ammo cavity, people called them female, and the robots just accepted this and said, I guess we're girls. But yeah, why do we gender robots? Why are we so attached to gender? Is another thing science fiction can explore. And I'd like to see more non-binary characters. I didn't see very many in my research. And most of them were robots.
Or aliens. It's a classic.
Yeah, robots or aliens. And I get it. It's easy. But let's get the non-binariness out of the robots and aliens.
Yeah.
In Anglo-American short fiction, I see lots of non-binary characters already.
Yes, no, it's much more popular now than it was in again, my research stopped in 2010, so.
I think it's really recent. And in Germany, it's recent, like the last 2 or 3 years. And it's only because of one magazine and maybe five other authors or so. They are doing the non-binary characters all on their own.
But the question is really, why can't we let machines, robots, AIs be what they are and not try to humanize them? That's one question. So are we afraid to share something with entities which are not human and we couldn't put some human ideas on them? And the other thing is, right, why do we have these kind of aliens and robots to get in touch with human identities and human aspects, like non-binary, to get them these plays? Why are people afraid to let humans being human? So these are two questions which I think just go in different direction. But perhaps they have a similar cure in them.
I love that.
I don't know if it's a kind of anxiety or something else.
But also anxiety is a rich place for fiction, right?
Mm-hmm. To explore them in a safe place.
Right. Another thing that I noticed when I was going through the pulp era magazines was, even though I wasn't really looking at the content of the stories, I was just looking at the authors, I could see the preoccupations of the times, right? The yellow peril, oh God, of the 40s, and where all the aliens suddenly look very Asian. And then into the fear of the atomic bomb in the 50s and the 60s, fear of overpopulation. You know, you just see whatever seems to be the most existential threat to the writers coming to the fore.
That's interesting. So what are the current anxieties in that terms?
Climate. Climate apocalypse and AI losing all of our jobs.
But we don't have these jobs, really. They're just function. We know. We don't know what we are doing our jobs.
Right, right.
We learned that already.
When nobody knows what you're actually doing, you can't lose your job to an AI. That's the trick.
Because AI doesn't know to do it either.
Nobody knows what I do.
Yeah, yes. Safe.
Actually, really, nobody knows what I do.
So we can prove if that hypothesis will become true.
Well, to summarize a bit. So Marie has looked at the class, and to spoil a little bit of the findings, most characters were pretty wealthy. So what you told that man at the cocktail party was actually true. And maybe it's good to never talk to him again. And Jamie looked at the diversity of figures in the German short prose last year and came to the conclusion, well, we could maybe do better because most figures still are white and male. Which is a very broad summary, but we have this really cool essay, which we will put in the show note, Jamie's and Marie's as well. And then we have the future work. We will do all three of us together, at least for the 30 stories we've already chosen, to have a look at the very fresh Anglo-American short prose in science fiction. And maybe it's a little bit. Yes. Yeah. And then we will maybe different. Meet again and talk about it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because we have access to this cool podcast very easily.
And somehow we will all also do our day
jobs. But if you don't know what your day job is, you can't lose it.
That's true.
Yeah. So we will have lots of fun in the near future coding some really cool stories. I'm already looking forward to it. And then put it in a really cool Excel. And then let's just see what we do with the findings and who will publish them first.
Yeah.
I think we share them. Ah, okay. Which magazine?
Yeah.
They can apply if they want.
You know,
I can do a call.
Should pitch it to some places like.
I really doubt that American magazines are already listening to this podcast. I don't think it's that famous yet.
Yes.
German magazines, yes. Some of them are listening to it, but not from the USA. Not Neil Clark or the Locust guys or so, which would be cool, but no.
Hey,
way to go.
Neil follows me on social media. I will share this podcast and he might watch it. Listen.
Yeah, then, okay, and you will be the first one from the USA. He's so nice. I had contact
Neil,
to him for some reason. He's really nice.
He is.
So, hello to Neil if you're listening. And hello to everybody else.
He loves the dogs. Does he have dogs?
We're just three really big fangirls. That's all we are. Science fiction fans.
You're holding a sign. You can't see it because it's a podcast.
Okay, cool. So thank you for being here and sharing your findings and your thoughts on it with our audience. And I look forward to talk to both of you very soon again in this very long email thread we've already created. Ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao.